Given the premises, the conclusion is inescapable. So arguments with this structure are properly formed deductive arguments. Validity is a useful criterion for judging arguments because someone might try to make a deductive argument but fail to form it properly, in which case we call it invalid. For example, the following is an invalid argument. 1. Courage is more important than honesty. 2. Kindness is more important than honesty. 3. Therefore, courage and kindness are equally important. In this argument, the premises do not imply the conclusion. A quick glance at the symbolization proves it. 1. C is greater than H. 2. K is greater than H. 3. C equals K. Let C equals 2, H equals 1, K equals 3. In this case, the premises are true, but the conclusion is false. Granted, if we instead let C equals 2 and K equals 2, then we would have true premises with a true conclusion. But the point is that the premises give us no guarantee that C and K are both equal to the same number. Therefore, there is no guarantee they are equal to each other. We are left with uncertainty in the conclusion, which is not permitted in deduction. Notice that validity concerns only the structure of the argument, not the content. When you check to see whether a deductive argument is properly formed, it makes absolutely no difference whether or not you agree with it. Consider the following example. 1. Oscar is a party animal. 2. Party animals never stay home alone on a Saturday night. 3. Therefore, Oscar never stays home alone on Saturday night. This is a valid argument because if the premises are true, then the conclusion has to be true. Suppose you happen to know, however, that the conclusion is false. In fact, Oscar does sometimes stay home alone on Saturday night. This does not mean that the argument is invalid. On the contrary, it means that there must be a problem in one of the premises because the conclusion follows from them. If Oscar sometimes stays home alone on Saturday night, then either 1. Oscar is not a party animal, or 2. It just isn't true that party animals never stay home alone on Saturday night. You get to decide which premise to challenge. Perhaps you will challenge them both. Validity is not a matter of your agreement or disagreement. It is a matter of the relationship between the premises and the conclusion. It may strike you as strange to call an argument valid if you disagree with it, but we need a word for arguments that are structured correctly so that we can distinguish them from arguments that are structured incorrectly. Consider the following argument. 1. Oscar is a party animal. 2. Felix is Oscar's roommate. 3. Therefore, Felix is a party animal. This is an invalid argument because the premises do not imply the conclusion. Even if you happen to agree with each of the steps do not add up the way they should. It is entirely possible that Felix is exactly opposite of Oscar, even though they happen to be rooming together. Validity is an objective criterion that does not depend on opinion. Either the premises imply the conclusion, or they do not. If they do not, then you need to start over. If they do, then you are ready to move on to the second criterion. The second criterion for evaluating deductive arguments is soundness. Like the word valid, the word sound is used in an informal way in everyday conversation. For example, if you say, "Earl has sound judgment," you're basically saying you agree with the way Earl thinks. In logic, however, soundness has a technical meaning. An argument is sound when 1. It is valid, and 2. Its premises are true. Logicians deliberately make validity part of the definition of soundness to force you to check for correct structure in an argument before examining its content. They knew this would be hard for you to do. When people first look at an argument, their natural instinct is to evaluate the content first. This is a mistake because if the structure is incorrect, you will have to start over anyway. We can use the following analogy to establish this point. Suppose you are a house inspector sent to evaluate an old abandoned house. As you approach, you can see through the window that it is full of strange and interesting furniture. So you dash inside to have a look. Unfortunately, you forget to check the structure of the house first. The floor gives way and you fall to your death on the cement in the basement. This analogy is a warning. Always look at structure before you look at content, even though you will be tempted to look at content first. Politicians exploit the human temptation to put content before structure. A politician might make the following argument. 1. War is terrible. 2. Education is good. 3. People need to work together. 4. Therefore, you should vote for me. If you are focused on the content of this argument, you might be impressed. Who could disagree? The problem, however, is that the argument does not add up. The premises do not imply the conclusion. There is no necessary connection between the final proposal and the reasons advanced in favor of it. When you encounter an argument like this, do not proceed, throw it away and start over. When, and only when, you have established that an argument is valid, you can proceed to examine its content. While validity is an objective judgment, soundness is a subjective judgment. We can see this by returning to our first example of deductive validity. 1. Money is more valuable than good looks. 2. Freedom is more valuable than money. 3. Therefore, freedom is more valuable than good looks. We have already established that the premises imply the conclusion, so it is valid. But are the premises true? There will be different views here and no way to establish with certainty which one is correct. Some people will say the argument is sound, while others say it isn't. That's fine. We don't expect people to agree about soundness the way we expect them to agree about validity. Remember, uncertainty in the premises is the mark of deductive arguments. Some deductive arguments may seem quite certain. For example, a historian might argue, 1. Cleopatra was a woman. 2. Cleopatra was a ruler of Egypt. 3. Therefore, a woman was the ruler of Egypt. Few people will dispute this argument. It is valid, and perhaps its premises have never been doubted. Nevertheless, we still consider it a matter of opinion to call it sound, insofar as it is possible for someone to disagree with the premises. We can imagine, for instance, someone uncovering some sort of evidence suggesting that Cleopatra was actually a man in drag. It doesn't matter how far out this challenge to premise one might be. The point is that it is not impossible. People have a right to their opinions, no matter how crazy. Of course, there is an objective answer to the question of whether Cleopatra was a woman or a man. But there is no final definitive way to prove the answer. And if you think about it, you'll see that the same goes for every factual claim, no matter how obvious. For example, there is no way to prove that you are listening to this book right now, because it's possible that you are actually in a mental hospital dreaming the whole thing. So soundness is always considered a subjective judgment. When you call an argument sound, you are saying that you believe the content to be true. Validity, on the other hand, is not a subjective judgment because when the premises of an argument imply its conclusion, it is not possible for the premises to be true while the conclusion is false. Consider the symbolic representation of our Cleopatra argument. 1. C equals W. 2. C equals R. 3. W equals R. No one can escape this inference. If you try to deny it, you're not crazy, you're simply wrong. Denying this inference would be like denying that 2 plus 2 equals 4. If a child were to assert that 2 plus 2 equals 5, we would say that he better look again, not that he has a right to his opinion. Soundness is the highest praise you can give an argument, because it means that the argument is valid and that it has true premises in your view. You may be wondering why the definition of soundness doesn't say that the conclusion should be true. The answer is that it doesn't need to. Think about it. Validity plus true premises equals true conclusion. The two components of the definition of soundness imply the truth of the conclusion. We have already seen that a valid argument can be unsound, but can a sound argument be invalid? Since the definition of soundness presupposes validity, the answer is a resounding no. Nevertheless, sometimes people are fooled by an argument like the following. 1. An apple is a fruit. 2. A banana is a fruit. 3. Therefore, a pear is a fruit. The premises do not imply the conclusion, so we know it is not valid. Is it sound? It can't be sound because it isn't valid. But the premises and the conclusion are true. So what? It's just a list. We can't call a list of true statements a sound argument. Soundness is our highest praise for arguments. We reserve it for arguments we regard as perfect. An argument whose premises do not imply its conclusion is far from perfect. If you need a word to describe arguments like this one about fruit, you can say it contains true statements or something to that effect, but do not call it sound. So, critical thinkers have two criteria for evaluating arguments. One objective, validity, and one subjective, soundness. Just because soundness is subjective does not mean anything goes. Some subjective judgments are more reasonable than others. There are a lot of things critical thinkers can do to be sure their judgments are maximally reasonable. We will learn more about them in subsequent chapters. Exercises. The following passages contain arguments by analogy. Reconstruct them in valid, deductive standard form using the pattern and structure we discussed earlier. Bear in mind that you will need to reword the generic phrase "is related to" in accordance with the language of the passage. Also, feel free to translate the author's ideas into your own words. Since argument reconstruction requires interpretation, there will be more than one way to do it. Scribble possibilities on scrap paper. You can't expect to solve a puzzle on the first try. When you think you have an accurate reconstruction, check it against the key at the end of this book. Cultural studies. Find two analogies. Defining racism, can we talk? Beverly Daniel Tatum. Prejudice is one of the inescapable consequences of living in a racist society. Cultural racism, the cultural images and messages that affirm the assumed superiority of whites and the assumed inferiority of people of color, is like smog in the air. Sometimes it is so thick it is visible, other times it is less apparent, but always, day in and day out, we are breathing it in. None of us would introduce ourselves as smog breathers, and most of us don't want to be described as prejudiced. But if we live in a smoggy place, how can we avoid breathing the air? If we live in an environment in which we are bombarded with stereotypical images in the media, are frequently exposed to the ethnic jokes of friends and family members, and are rarely informed of the accomplishments of oppressed groups, we will develop the negative categorizations of those groups that form the basis of prejudice. People of color, as well as whites, developed these categorizations. Even a member of the stereotyped group may internalize the stereotypical categories about his or her own group to some degree. In fact, this process happens so frequently that it has a name, internalized oppression. I sometimes visualize the ongoing cycle of racism as a moving walkway at the airport. Active racist behavior is equivalent to walking fast on the conveyor belt. The person engaged in active racist behavior has identified with the ideology of white supremacy and is moving with it. Passive racist behavior is equivalent to standing still on the walkway. No overt effort is being made, but the conveyor belt moves the bystanders along to the same destination as those who are actively walking. Some of the bystanders may feel the motion of the conveyor belt, see the active racists ahead of them, and choose to turn around, unwilling to go to the same destination as the white supremacists. But unless they are walking actively in the opposite direction at a speed faster than the conveyor belt, unless they are actively anti-racist, they will find themselves carried along with the others.